The Warrior's Communication Code. Forge unbreakable influence through the science of speech. Introduction. You've been lied to. Communication isn't about connecting, sharing, or finding common ground. It's about dominance, not the cheap, loud-mouthed kind. The kind that bends reality, rewires minds, and carves your legacy into the walls of every room you leave. This isn't a skill. It's a code forged in the fires of neuroscience, psychology, and the unrelenting laws of human behavior. And right now, you're holding the key to crack it. Let's cut the noise. How many times have you watched opportunities slip because your words landed like apologies instead of commands? How many deals died because your voice trembled when it should have thundered? How many relationships fractured because your silence was mistaken for weakness, not strategy? You don't need better communication. You need a ruthless overhaul, a demolition of every limp habit, every self-sabotaging whisper, every flicker of hesitation that's cost you respect, power, and control. This book isn't about fixing you. It's about weaponizing you. The battle you didn't know you were losing. Your brain is a battlefield. Every conversation, every glance, every pause is a skirmish for authority. Yet most people wander into these fights unarmed, governed by instincts they don't understand and reflexes they never chose. They blame personality or introversion for their defeats. Bullshit. Science has proven that communication isn't innate. It's sculpted. Your voice, your posture, your silence, they're not accidents. They're programs running on outdated software written by fear, insecurity, and the ghosts of every no you've ever swallowed. But here's the truth. Neuroplasticity doesn't care about your excuses. Your brain is a machine waiting for your orders. It can rewire itself to radiate confidence instead of cower, to strike with precision instead of fumble, to command rooms instead of shrink in them. The research is clear. Mastery isn't reserved for the gifted. It's seized by those ruthless enough to reprogram their minds. And this audiobook is your blueprint. Society sells you soft skills as if influence were a gentle art. They tell you to listen more, be empathetic, collaborate. But let's name the game. The world rewards conquerors, not mediators. Every time you've bitten your tongue to keep the peace, you've surrendered ground. Every time you've mumbled, "I think," instead of "I know," you've handed someone else the reins. Weakness isn't a personality trait. It's a habit, drilled into you by a system that profits from your compliance. But what if your greatest vulnerabilities, the shaky voice, the racing mind, the fear of conflict, are just raw materials? What if your brain's so-called flaws are unmined reserves of power, waiting for you to weaponize them? The science is unequivocal. The same neural pathways that amplify doubt can be hijacked to fuel unshakable certainty. The adrenaline that chokes your throat in confrontation, it can be channeled into a voice that cuts steel. This isn't metaphor. This is biology, and it's time to turn your biology into a blade. Forget confidence. Forget charisma. This is about architecture, building a mind and body system that operates with the precision of a war machine and the subtlety of a shadow. This book isn't for the timid. It's for the architects, the infiltrators, the ones who refuse to let their words die in their throats. You're not here to improve. You're here to unlearn everything that made you small and rebuild your communication DNA from the ground up. I won't coddle you. The process will demand grit. You'll confront cringe-worthy recordings of your own voice. You'll dissect failures you've buried. You'll drill exercises that feel less like practice and more like boot camp for your psyche. But on the other side, a version of you that negotiates, raises with a smirk, delivers presentations that leave rooms breathless, and turns critics into disciples with a single glance. The question isn't, can you afford to listen? It's, can you afford not to? The code is here. The science is here. The stakes? Your future. Chapter 1. Mindset of unshakable clarity. You do not speak to be heard. You speak to be obeyed. Clarity is not a virtue. It is a declaration of war against the chaos of human misunderstanding. Every word you utter is either a coronation of your authority or a surrender to the mob. This chapter will gut the weakness in your communication like a fish. You will learn to strip your language of every trace of apology, every flicker of hesitation, every breath of ambiguity that has ever diluted your power. Let me be clear. If your words do not cut like a scalpel, they are noise, and noise is the currency of the weak. The first lie you must burn is the idea that clarity is about being understood. Number clarity is about colonizing the minds of your listeners. It is about forcing your reality onto theirs with such surgical precision that resistance becomes unthinkable. Ambiguity is not a mistake. It is a choice, a coward's choice to hide behind vagueness, to avoid accountability. You are not here to hide. You are here to stand naked in the storm of your convictions and dare the world to blink first. The moment you hedge, the moment you say, I think, instead of, I know, you have already lost. Weakness is a scent. Predators smell it. They circle. They feast. Silence doubt by annihilating its roots. Doubt is not an emotion. It is a neural parasite, fed by every time you rehearsed failure instead of victory, every time you let a critic's voice live rent-free in your skull. Neuroscience confirms this. The brain cannot distinguish between imagined defeat and real defeat. Every "what if I fail" carves a trench in your psyche, deeper than any actual failure. To kill doubt, you must starve it. Speak as if your words are prophecies. Act as if your decisions are laws of physics. There is no try. There is only do, and do is the hammer that shatters doubt's spine. Your boundaries are not requests. They are ultimatums. To apologize for them is to kneel. Every sorry but is a whimper. Every if it's okay with you, is a white flag. You do not negotiate your right to exist. You state it. The world does not give you space. You carve it. When you say no, say it with the finality of a judge's gavel. When you say this is non-negotiable, let your tone leave frost on the walls. Clarity of boundaries is not cruelty. It is mercy. For you, and for those too lost to respect their own. The psychology of command is not about volume. It is about velocity. The speed at which your words land determines their weight. Hesitation is a crack in your armor. The human brain detects uncertainty in 0.2 seconds, a survival mechanism honed over millennia. When you pause too long, when you backtrack, when you litter your speech with ums and us, you trigger primal alarms in your listeners. Their lizard brains whisper, this one is prey. To command, you must outpace doubt. Speak in statements, not questions. End sentences with periods, not upward inflections that beg approval. Your voice is a guillotine. Let it drop. Authority is not given. It is taken. And it is taken through the ruthless elimination of flinching. Every time you look away first in a stare down, every time you adjust your posture to make others comfortable, every time you swallow your truth to avoid conflict, you etch subordinate into your aura. Here is the science. Power is a feedback loop. Your body language dictates your brain's chemistry. Stand with your shoulders back for just 2 minutes, and testosterone surges, cortisol plummets. You feel dominant because you are dominant. Now weaponize this. Lock your gaze like a sniper's crosshairs. Plant your feet like redwoods. Let your silence roar louder than others' screams. The cost of ambiguity is invisibility. The world does not remember the vague. It does not promote the hesitant. It does not follow the apologetic. You are either a lighthouse or a shadow. Choose. To cut through noise is not a metaphor. It is a biological imperative. The human attention span is 8 seconds, less than a goldfish. You have one sentence to hijack a mind. One. Waste it with throat-clearing politeness, and you are dead in the water. Start with fire. Start with a demand. Start with a truth so sharp it draws blood. Listen now is for librarians. You need this is for salespeople. You will remember this is for those who command kingdoms. Iron conviction is not confidence. It is possession. When you speak, you are not sharing thoughts. You are exorcising a truth so violent it cannot be contained. Hesitation is blasphemy. The moment you doubt your right to speak is the moment you surrender your right to lead. History is written by the obsessed, the delusional, the ones who spoke their visions as facts long before the world caught up. You think Van Gogh asked permission to paint the stars. You think Mandela negotiated his way out of Robben Island with maybe and perhaps. Number, they infected reality with their certainty. You must do the same. Your words are not tools. They are extensions of your nervous system. Every syllable must vibrate with the electricity of your intent. To own your message is to fuse your identity with your speech until there is no difference between who you are and what you say. This is not about memorizing scripts. This is about rewiring your psyche until your truth becomes autonomic, a reflex, a heartbeat, a force as inevitable as gravity. When they ask you to bend, your no should crack concrete. When they demand compromise, your silence should taste like arsenic. Let me gut the poetry and show you the gears. Clarity is a three-act play written in blood. Act 1. Identify every weak word in your vocabulary. Every just, maybe. I'm no expert, but... and execute them. These are not words. They are self-inflicted wounds. Act 2. Speak to one person always, not crowds, not groups. One. Human brains are tribal. They respond to direct, personal threat or reward. Even in a boardroom of 50, fix your eyes on a single target. Let the others lean in to eavesdrop on what you're telling their leader. Act 3. Repeat your core message until your enemies can recite it in their sleep. Repetition is not redundancy. It is hypnosis. The brain trusts what it hears repeatedly. Be a jackhammer. Be a dripping tap. Be the mantra that rewires their loyalty. You want technique? Here it is, raw and bleeding. Before any high-stakes conversation, write down the exact outcome you demand, not want, demand. Then, script the 3 sentences that will make that outcome inevitable. Not 10. 3. The human brain cannot process more than 3 priorities at once. This is not opinion. This is the magic number of cognitive load. Your first sentence stakes your claim. Your second sentence proves its inevitability. Your 3rd sentence dictates the next move. Example. This deal closes Friday. Your competitors signed yesterday. Bring your pen or bring your excuses. No metaphors. No data dumps. No room for interpretation. The barbarian's eloquence, the cult of niceness, will call this arrogance. Let them. The world is not split between the kind and the cruel. It is split between the decisive and the devoured. You think lions negotiate with gazelles. You think storms apologize for the rain. You are not here to be liked. You are here to be unignorable. To achieve this, you must become a stranger to your former self. The old you dies the moment you stop asking, "Will they listen?" and start declaring, "They will listen." Still here? Good. The surgery is not complete. We must cauterize the wound. Clarity requires violence. Not to others, but to the parts of you that still crave approval. Every time you dilute your message to soothe, you betray your mission. Every time you swap a hard truth for a soft lie, you dig your grave. Let me be cruel in your service. No one is coming to save you. No mentor will gift you courage. No audience will clap you into confidence. You must wrench clarity from your throat like a stillborn twin and baptize it in the fire of your refusal to be misunderstood. This is the mindset of unshakable clarity. It is not a skill. It is a rebirth. You are not learning. You are unlearning. Every whimper, every compromise, every moment you bit your tongue when you should have drawn blood. The path is simple, not easy. Speak as if your words will be carved on your tombstone. Act as if every syllable is your last. Because in the end, when the room falls silent and the stakes are naked, clarity is the only thing that will stand between you and oblivion. Now, pick up your sword. Chapter 2. Voice. Your weapon of precision. Your voice is not a tool. It is not a gift. It is not an accident of biology. It is a weapon forged in the fires of intention, sharpened by discipline, and deployed with the cold precision of a surgeon's scalpel. You have been told that communication is about words, about content, about the hollow theater of active listening. This is a lie. The words themselves are irrelevant. What matters is how you weaponize the raw physics of sound, the cadence that hypnotizes, the volume that shatters, the silence that strangles. This is not poetry. This is warfare by another name. And you are either the predator or the prey. Let's begin with a brutal truth. Your voice is failing you. Right now, as you read this, your vocal cords are trembling with untapped potential. You mumble when you should roar. You rush when you should linger. You fill sacred silence with the garbage of and handing your power to anyone with the spine to seize it. You have been conditioned to fear your own sound, to shrink your tone into something palatable, digestible, weak. But weakness is a choice. And today, that choice dies. The foundation of lethal communication is not your message. It is your mastery of the three pillars: tone, timing, and tactical silence. These are not abstract concepts. They are mathematical equations governed by the laws of human psychology and the hardwired instincts of your audience's lizard brain. To wield them is to hack into the primal operating system of every person in the room, bypassing logic and striking directly at the limbic system, where fear, respect, and submission are born. Tone is your first blade. It is not what you say. It is how you say it. The texture, the temperature, the vibration that makes spines stiffen or knees buckle. A voice that cracks under pressure is not a sign of anxiety. It is a death rattle. A voice that drips with controlled menace is not a personality quirk. It is a calculated assault. The human ear is not a neutral instrument. It is a predator detector, fine-tuned over millennia to recognize threat or safety in the microseconds between syllables. Your job is to weaponize this truth. Consider the calculated growl, a tone that lives in the lower register, vibrating with the rumble of a distant storm. This is not about shouting. This is about density, about weight, about making your voice a physical presence that presses against the chests of your listeners. Deploy it when you need to shut down dissent without raising your hand. Use it to punctuate non-negotiable statements, transforming. I suggest we consider alternatives into, this is the way. The growl is not a request. It is a verdict. But do not mistake volume for power. A whisper can be far more lethal than a scream. When you drop your voice to a near inaudible hush, you force your enemies to lean in, to strain, to physically bend toward you in a submissive arc. This is the dagger whisper, a tone so quiet it becomes a weapon of intimacy. Use it to deliver threats that sound like secrets, to share truths that feel forbidden, to make your audience complicit in their own surrender. A room silenced by a scream is tense. A room silenced by a whisper is conquered. Timing is your second weapon. The art of rhythm, pace, and the strategic manipulation of expectation. Most people vomit words in a frantic bid to be heard, their sentences crashing into each other like panicked sheep. This is not communication. This is surrender. Mastery lies in controlling the clock, in stretching seconds into minutes and compressing hours into heartbeats. The brain does not process information in a linear flow. It chases patterns. It craves predictability. And when you shatter that predictability, you own its attention. The knife-edge pause is your greatest ally. It is the silence between the lightning and the thunder, the moment when anticipation curdles into dread. Deploy it after a provocation. Let it hang in the air like a guillotine blade. Watch as your target's pupils dilate, as their throat tightens, as their mind races to fill the void with their own fears. A pause is not emptiness. It is a vacuum, and nature abhors a vacuum. When you stop speaking, you force the world to lean into your silence, begging you to continue. This is how hostages are made of audiences. Speed is a double-edged sword. Rapid-fire delivery can convey urgency. Yes, but urgency is the refuge of the desperate. True power lies in the deliberate drag of time. Slow your cadence when stating non-negotiables. Let each word land like a coffin nail. We will not yield four words stretched across 10 seconds, become a mantra, a spell, a law carved in stone. Contrast this with sudden bursts of speed to simulate momentum, to herd minds toward a predetermined conclusion before resistance can form. Timing is not about pace. It is about possession. You are not sharing ideas. You are conducting a symphony of neural hijacking. Tactical silence is the nuclear option. It is the absence that speaks louder than screams, the void that terrifies, because it cannot be reasoned with, bargained with, or placated. Most people fear silence because it reveals their nakedness, their lack of preparation, their dependence on noise to mask incompetence. You will weaponize this fear. When challenged, do not rebut. Freeze. Lock eyes. Let the silence swell until it crushes the opposition's bravado. Watch them backtrack, stammer, implode. Silence is the arena where pretenders are exposed and masters are crowned. But understand this. None of these tools matter if you lack the foundation. Your voice is a mirror of your nervous system. A shaky breath betrays doubt. A shallow diaphragm screams insecurity. You cannot fake biology. Before you step into any room, you must first conquer your own physiology. This is not metaphorical. This is the cold science of cortisol and adrenaline, of vagus nerve hacks and diaphragmatic dominance. Stand like a loaded spring. Breathe from the depths of your gut. Oxygenate your blood until your cells hum with readiness. Your voice is not a separate entity. It is the battle cry of your entire organism, and it will crack unless your body is a fortress. Let's dissect a real-world kill shot. Imagine you're facing a hostile boardroom, arms crossed, eyes narrowed, the air thick with contempt. You have 60 seconds to reverse the tide. Option 1. You plead. You rationalize. You flood the room with data. They tear you apart. Option 2. You enter with a prowler's gait. You take your time sitting. You let the tension thicken. When you speak, your first sentence is a whisper, forcing them to crane forward. Your second sentence lands like a hammer, slow, loud, each vowel a detonation. Halfway through, you pause. Lock eyes with the alpha. Wait until he blinks, then finish with a growl that vibrates the table. They don't just agree, they apologize. This is not charisma. This is physics. Sound waves bending behavior. Frequencies triggering primal submission. The difference between a beggar and a king is not content. It's acoustics, Now, let's gut the myths. Myth one, authenticity matters. Bullshit. Your authentic voice is a prison built by childhood wounds and societal conditioning. Reinvent it. Myth two, confidence is key. Wrong. Confidence is a side effect of competence. Drill the mechanics until your voice can't tremble if it tried. Myth three, silence is awkward. Only for the weak. For you, silence is a scalpel. You want technique? Here it is, raw and unfiltered. Exercise one, the mirror drill. Stand naked. Speak to your reflection in a tone that makes you flinch. If you don't recoil, you're not pushing hard enough. Exercise two, the interruption game. Let a partner try to speak over you. Train your voice to deepen, slow, and amplify until their words crumble. Exercise three, the pause ledger. Record every conversation. Count how many times you default to noise. Each is a debt. Pay it in push-ups. This is not a seminar. This is a boot camp for your larynx. You will emerge hoarse, raw, reborn. The final truth? Your voice is not yours. It is a contagion. Every tone you deploy rewires the brains of those who hear it, implanting obedience, desire, or fear. You are not speaking to ears. You are programming nervous systems. The warrior is not a metaphor. It is a biological reality. When you speak with precision, you trigger ancient circuits, the same circuits that made our ancestors bow to thunder, to chiefs, to gods. Now open your mouth and conquer. Chapter 3. Body language, the unspoken edge. Your body is not a passive vessel. It is a weapon, a broadcast tower, a living manifesto of your intent. Every slouch, every fidget, every glance that darts away like a startled animal. These are not accidents. They are choices. Weakness is not inherited. It is practiced. And today, that practice ends. This chapter will not coddle you with platitudes about confidence or positive vibes. It will gut the lies you've been sold about natural charisma and force you to confront the raw, unflinching truth. Dominance is a science. Your posture, your gaze, your very breath. These are levers of control. Pull them correctly, and rooms bend to your will. Fail to master them, and you will forever be outmaneuvered by those who did. Let's begin. The human brain is hardwired to obey non-verbal signals before a single word leaves your lips. Before you speak, your body has already declared war or surrendered. Studies show that strangers judge your competence, status, and trustworthiness within 100 milliseconds of seeing you. Not minutes, milliseconds. Your posture alone can spike cortisol, the stress hormone, in those around you, triggering primal submission. This is not opinion. This is biology. And biology does not negotiate. You will either weaponize it or be victimized by it. Let's dissect the pillars. Eye contact is not a courtesy. It is a siege. The moment you lock eyes with another human, you trigger a primal power struggle. Pupils dilate, heart rates sink, subconscious hierarchies form. The weak break gaze first, signaling deference. The dominant hold it, forcing others to blink, to look away, to acknowledge their lower rank. But here's where most fail. They mistake staring for strength. Brutish, unbroken eye contact reeks of desperation, not control. Mastery lies in the calculated violation. Hold gaze just long enough to unsettle, then release it, not out of fear, but to signal you're unbothered by their presence. Let them wonder when you'll strike next. In negotiations, fix your eyes slightly above theirs, creating the illusion of looking through them. This triggers unease, a subliminal sense that you're assessing their worth. Pair this with a faint, unreadable smirk, and you've just turned a casual conversation into a psychological duel. Your posture is not a pose. It is a declaration. The spine is the scaffold of authority. slump it, and you compress your lungs, reducing oxygen flow to the brain, fogging your thoughts. Stand with the rigidity of a marionette, and you broadcast rigidity, not power. True dominance lives in the paradox, a spine straight as a blade, yet shoulders relaxed, as if the weight of the world is a feather on your back. This is the fortress stance, rooted, unshakable, yet fluid enough to adapt. Practice it until it's autonomic. When seated, claim space like a predator claiming territory. Arms resting wide, legs uncrossed, torso open. Do not shrink, do not fold. The chair does not own you. You own the chair. And when you move, move with the precision of a storm. Not reckless flailing, but deliberate, controlled force. Walk as if every step is carving your initials into the earth. Gestures are not flourishes. They are scalpels. The average person waves their hands like a drowning man, begging for attention. You will be surgical. Palms down, fingers together. This is the command plane, a gesture that silences rooms and halts objections mid-sentence. Point with your entire hand, not a single finger. The difference between a request and a decree. When emphasizing a point, slice the air horizontally, a physical metaphor for cutting through nonsense. And when you want to intimidate without words, steeple your fingers slowly, letting the silence amplify the gesture's menace. But beware, inconsistency is death. A sharp gesture paired with a slouched posture is like a lion roaring while cowering. Every movement must align. Every twitch must serve the mission. The face is a battlefield most lose before they've begun. The human face contains 43 muscles, each a potential traitor. A micro twitch of the brow betrays doubt. A lip bitten in hesitation screams insecurity. To master the unspoken edge, you must become a tyrant over your own expressions. Practice the still face in mirrors. No smiles, no frowns, just the calm of a frozen lake. This is not about being emotionless. It's about choosing when to unleash emotion as a tactical strike. Smile only when you want to disarm, not to appease. Furrow your brow, not when you're confused, but when you want to force others to backtrack. And never, ever let your eyes widen in surprise. Surprise is for the unprepared. You are always prepared. Breath is the invisible weapon. The weak breathe shallowly, from the chest, their anxiety visible in every rapid rise and fall. You will breathe from the diaphragm, deep and silent, oxygenating your blood to keep your mind razor sharp. Before entering any high-stakes encounter, take 3 breaths so slow they border on arrogance. Inhale for 6 counts, hold for 4. Exhale for 8. This is not meditation. This is physiological warfare, flooding your body with oxygen to starve fear chemicals, steadying your voice, and signaling through your stillness that you have nowhere else to be, because you don't. This moment belongs to you. Now, let's annihilate the myth of natural presence. There is no gene for power. There is only practice. Record yourself speaking. Watch the footage with the ruthlessness of a drill sergeant. Does your head bob like a buoy in a storm? Do your hands flutter like trapped moths? Does your weight shift side to side, as if you're begging the ground to swallow you? Fix it. Drill it. Burn the weakness out. Stand against a wall until your spine memorizes straightness. Hold a pen between your teeth to force engagement of the core muscles that stabilize posture. Practice speeches in front of a mirror, not to admire yourself, but to hunt down every twitch, every blink, every flicker of uncertainty. This is not vanity. This is the grind of rebuilding yourself molecule by molecule. And when you think you've mastered stillness, add motion. Walk into a room as if you're parting the Red Sea. Sit down as if the act itself is a coronation, reach for a glass of water as if you're drawing a sword. The goal is not theatricality. It is intentionality. Every motion must scream that you are where you are because you choose to be, not because you wandered in by accident. But be warned, the world will test you. Co-workers will mock your new rigidity. Friends will accuse you of being too intense. Ignore them. They are the crabs in the bucket, terrified of your ascent. The moment your body language shifts, their subconscious registers the threat. They will try to drag you back to mediocrity. Do not yield. Double down. Let your silence grow heavier. Let your gaze linger longer. Let your posture become a monument to what they fear most, your refusal to stay small. This is the unspoken edge. Not a collection of tricks, but a total recalibration of how you inhabit space. Your body is not separate from your mind. It is your mind. Every adjustment to your physicality rewires your brain, cementing confidence into neural pathways. Stand like a fortress long enough, and your mind becomes one. Move like a storm, and your thoughts learn to strike with lightning. The path is brutal. It demands daily discipline. You will ache. You will feel like an imposter. You will crave the comfort of old, familiar slouches. But remember, weakness is a habit, and habits can be smothered in their sleep. Start now. Stand. Breathe. Command. The world is waiting to kneel. Chapter 4. Conflict resolution without compromise. Conflict is not a problem to solve. It is a frontier to conquer. Weak minds see clashes as threats. Strategists see them as laboratories. This chapter is not about managing disagreements or finding middle ground. This is about bending the battlefield itself to your will. You do not negotiate with chaos. You strangle it. You do not plead for cooperation. You engineer it. Every confrontation is a test of your ability to expose what others hide, rewrite the rules of engagement, and leave opponents fighting for your agenda instead of against it. Surrender is not an option. It is a symptom of mental laziness. Let's begin with a truth you've been gaslit into forgetting. Most conflict is theater. The shouting matches, the passive-aggressive emails, the silent treatments. They are distractions, smokescreens. What lies beneath is raw, unspoken hunger. The desire for control, validation, or survival. Your job is not to resolve the surface drama. Your job is to surgically extract the rot beneath it. To do this, you must master the first law of leverage, expose hidden agendas, or die trying. Most people walk into conflicts blindfolded. They fixate on words, not motives. They react to anger, not fear. They negotiate with puppets, not puppet masters. This is how you lose. Every human interaction is a game of three-dimensional chess. The person screaming about deadlines is terrified of irrelevance. The colleague sabotaging your project is starved for recognition. The client nitpicking your proposal is masking their own incompetence. Your first move is always the same. Strip them naked, not with accusations, but with questions that scalpel through their facade. What outcome would make you feel secure? What's the real cost of delaying this decision? If we ignore the noise, what's the core issue here? Force their subconscious to betray them. Watch their eyes flicker when you articulate their unspoken fears better than they can. That flicker is your foothold. That flicker is power. Once you've exposed the agenda, you pivot. This is where amateurs crumble. They think leverage is about compromise. It is not. Leverage is about reframing the debate so your solution becomes their salvation. This is the second law. Control the narrative or become its casualty. The human brain is wired to cling to first impressions. The person who defines the problem owns the solution. Let me repeat that. The person who defines the problem owns the solution. Most conflicts persist because the wrong person is holding the pen. Your task is to snatch it. When a teammate attacks your idea as too risky, reframe their fear as a strength. You're right. This is risky. But the real danger isn't action, it's stagnation. Let's talk about how this risk protects us from obsolescence. When a client resists your timeline, reframe their resistance as vision. You're not being difficult, you're being meticulous. Let's align this timeline with your standards for excellence. See the shift? You're not dismissing their concern, you're weaponizing it. You're turning their objections into proof of your own credibility. This is not manipulation. This is linguistic jujitsu. But here's where most fail. They stop at reframing. They think a clever metaphor is enough. It is not. The third law separates tacticians from tyrants, force collaborators to want your outcome. Not to accept it. Not to tolerate it. To want it. To crave it like air. This is not about coercion. It's about neuroscience, dopamine, ownership, pride. The moment someone feels they've discovered your idea, they will defend it to the death. Your role is to choreograph that discovery, to bury your solution in a trail of breadcrumbs that leads them to it, panting as if it were their own. Start with a question they cannot resist. What's the one thing that would make this project unstoppable? Let them ramble. Let them dream. Then, subtly mirror their language as you present your plan. You mentioned unstoppable. What if we engineered a system that insert your idea here? Watch their eyes light up. Watch them nod as if they'd birthed the thought themselves. This is not deception. This is mastery. You have hacked their need for agency. You have made your victory their addiction. But let's be clear, this is not for the faint of heart. You will face resistance. You will face liars. You will face those who would rather burn the house down than let you redecorate. This is when you deploy the nuclear option. Silence. Most fear silence. They rush to fill it with concessions, apologies, or concessions disguised as apologies. This is how empires fall. Strategic silence is not passive. It is a predator's pause. It is the space where uncertainty breeds desperation. When confronted with irrationality, stop talking. Lean back. Let your gaze harden. Let the clock tick. Let their own words hang in the air like rotten fruit. They will squirm. They will backtrack. They will volunteer concessions you never requested. Why? Because silence is the mirror. It forces them to confront the absurdity of their own position. It whispers, "You're embarrassing yourself." And in that moment, you are no longer a participant in their chaos. You are its curator. But what if they don't fold? What if they escalate? Then you escalate harder. Not with volume, but with precision. Not with anger, but with ice. I understand you're upset, but we're here to solve problems, not rehearse them. Let's focus on outcomes that don't waste my time. See the shift? You've just redefined the rules. You've labeled their emotion as waste. You've positioned yourself as the guardian of efficiency. They now face a choice: evolve or evaporate. This brings us to the heart of conflict resolution without compromise, the death of equality. Equality is a myth sold to keep lions dining with lambs. In true conflict, there is no balance. There is only dominance. But dominance is not tyranny. It is the unflinching commitment to standards. It is the refusal to let others drag you into their muck. It is the understanding that some bridges deserve to burn. Let me illustrate. Imagine a colleague publicly undermines you in a meeting. The weak beg for mercy. Maybe I wasn't clear. The mediocre retaliate. You're wrong, and here's why. The strategist annihilates. Interesting critique. let's dissect it. Then, surgically dismantle their argument with data they can't refute. You said X. The metrics show Y. Was your feedback based on outdated intel, or is there a nuance I've missed? Now the room's attention shifts. The burden of proof is theirs. The heat is theirs. You've just turned their ambush into a referendum on their competence. This is conflict resolution without compromise. You don't just win. You redefine winning. But mastery demands more. It demands you study failure like a forensic scientist. Every unresolved conflict is a corpse on your path to greatness. Autopsy it. What did you miss? Was the agenda deeper than you thought? Did you reframe too late? Did you let emotion taint your silence? Dissect it. Then burn the lesson into your psyche. Finally, understand this. Conflict is not the enemy. Comfort is. The moment you fear confrontation, you've already lost. The moment you prioritize harmony over progress, you've sentenced your potential to death. True leaders do not avoid storms. They become the storm. They walk into fire, not to extinguish it, but to redirect its fury. Chapter 5. Persuasion. The art of dominant influence. This is where you stop begging and start owning. Persuasion is not a negotiation. It is not a debate. It is not a conversation. It is the deliberate, surgical implantation of your truth into the minds of others, a truth so irrefutable, so magnetic, that they will claw through their own doubts to defend it as if it were theirs. You are not here to convince. You are here to colonize, to make them need your truth like oxygen. To achieve this, you must abandon every weak-kneed tactic you've ever been taught. The groveling for approval, the over-explaining, the frantic juggling of facts, and embrace the ruthless science of dominant influence. This is not about changing minds, it is about rewiring them. Let's begin with the lie you've been sold, that persuasion is a dance of equals, a meeting of minds, nonsense. Persuasion is a one-way street paved with the rubble of skepticism. Your goal is not to meet your audience where they are, but to drag them, willingly, to where you stand. Every objection they raise is not a barrier. It is a blueprint, a map of their fears, their biases, their secret hungers. Your job is to study that map, then burn it, to dismantle their resistance not by answering their doubts, but by making those doubts irrelevant. How? By weaponizing the three pillars of invasion, data, emotion, and logic, not as separate tools, but as a fused trinity. A scalpel that slices through rationalizations and stitches your agenda into their core. Data is your first strike, not the dry, lifeless numbers crammed into bullet points, but data sharpened into a blade. You do not present statistics, you detonate them. Imagine this, you're pitching a climate initiative to a room of skeptics. You could say, carbon emissions have risen 12% since 2010. Weak, forgettable, a fact that invites debate. Now sharpen it. Every minute you delay this decision, another 3,700 tons of carbon erupt into the atmosphere. Enough to suffocate a city. Your hesitation isn't neutrality, it's arson. Feel the shift? Raw data becomes a ticking clock. A passive observation morphs into an accusation. This is how you weaponize information. You fuse it with consequence, with urgency, with identity. Make the audience see their own fingerprints on the problem, and your solution becomes the only exit from their guilt. But data alone is a blunt instrument. To dominate, you must marry it to emotion, the silent current that drowns reason. Emotion is not making them feel good. It is the deliberate hijacking of their nervous system. Fear, greed, pride, shame, these are your levers. Pull them with precision. Suppose you're selling a security system. The amateur says, our product reduces break-ins by 40%. The strategist says, picture this. It's 2 a.m. Your daughter's breathing is the only sound in the house. Then, a window shatters. Your phone lights up with an alert. Our system gives you 47 seconds to act. 47 seconds to lock the panic room, to press the silent alarm, to save her life. What's your current security provider offering? A discount. See the mechanics? You anchor the data to a visceral image, then tie it to a primal emotion. In this case, the terror of helplessness. You don't just sell features, you sell identity. The customer isn't buying a system. They're buying the right to call themselves a protector. Now, the final pillar. Logic. Not the sterile logic of textbooks, but the brutal logic of cause and effect. This is where you chain data and emotion into an unbreakable narrative. Let's dissect a common error. Most people structure arguments like a ladder. Here's my point. Here's why it makes sense. Here's why you should agree. Predictable. Resistible. Instead, structure your logic like a noose. Begin with an inescapable premise, a statement so obvious, so universally accepted, that disagreeing would make the audience feel foolish. For example, no one wants to lose money. Agree? Of course. Then, layer your argument as the only logical conclusion. Every dollar spent on cheap materials is a dollar incinerated. Every day you tolerate defects, you're not saving money. You're burning it. My proposal isn't an expense. It's a fire extinguisher. See the trap? You start with a truth they can't deny, then twist that truth into a funnel that pours them into your agenda. Resistance requires them to reject their own logic. Most won't. But here's where amateurs fail. They treat data, emotion, and logic as separate ingredients. They serve a salad when they should be engineering a virus. True persuasion occurs when all three pillars fuse into a single, unstoppable force. Take Apple's legendary 1984 ad. Data. A single statistic about computing power. Emotion. The terror of conformity. The thrill of rebellion. Logic. If you don't break free, you become the mindless drone. The result? A generation didn't just buy a computer. They joined a crusade. That's dominant influence, not persuasion, possession. Now, let's gut the elephant in the room. Objections. Most people fear them. You will weaponize them. When someone resists, they're not rejecting your idea. They're handing you a manual to their psyche. The key is to preempt objections by baking their destruction into your argument. For example, if you're proposing a risky investment, don't wait for the inevitable. It's too risky. Crush it before it forms. The real risk isn't in acting. It's in standing still while your competitors evolve. Ask Blockbuster how playing it safe worked against Netflix. By naming their objection before they voice it, you steal their ammunition. Better yet, you twist their fear into proof of your point. This brings us to the pinnacle of persuasion, making the audience believe they discovered your truth. The human mind clings fiercely to ideas it births itself. Your task is to midwife that illusion. How? By asking questions you've rigged with answers. Instead of declaring, "We need to cut costs," provoke, "Where would you look first to eliminate waste without harming quality?" Lead them through a labyrinth where every turn is your design. But let them touch the walls when they say, "Maybe we renegotiate supplier contracts." Smile and reveal your pre-drafted plan. They'll swear it was their genius. This is the art of strategic surrender, letting them win so you can conquer. Yet none of this matters if you ignore the final rule. Dominance requires unshakable delivery. Your words could be flawless, but if your voice wavers, if your eyes flicker, if your posture whispers apology, the entire structure crumbles. You must embody your message with the certainty of a prophet. Speak not as someone seeking approval, but as a force reporting facts from the future. When your tone, your face, your spine radiate absolute conviction, the audience's brains will shortcut past doubt. They'll attribute authority to you, not because of your title, but because your presence leaves no room for alternatives. This is the art of dominant influence, not manipulation, not coercion, elevation. You lift the audience from the swamp of indecision and plant them on the solid ground of your truth. But remember, this power is not for the timid. It demands relentless practice. Record your pitches and dissect every flinch. Study the great persuaders. Churchill's defiance, Jobs's showmanship, Oprah's intimacy, and reverse engineer their tactics. Then, make them yours. The road ahead is not easy. You will falter. You will face audiences who seem immune. But remember this, every no is a gift, a spotlight on a flaw in your arsenal. Hone your blades, return. And when you finally stand before them again, armed with data that terrifies, emotion that paralyzes, and logic that suffocates dissent, you will not need to persuade. You will command, and they will obey, not because you forced them, but because you made them need it. Persuasion is not a skill. It is a hierarchy. Climb it, or be crushed beneath it. The choice is yours. Chapter 6. Legacy. Building a communication empire. You don't build empires with speeches. You build them with systems so airtight, so unshakable, that your absence becomes irrelevant. Legacy isn't about being remembered. It's about being inescapable. Your voice in the throats of others, your principles etched into the walls of every room you've ever entered, your strategies replicating like viruses long after you've left the battlefield. This is not poetry. This is the science of immortality through influence. And if you think this chapter is about leaving a mark, you've already failed. This is about rigging the game so thoroughly that your competitors choke on your shadow for decades. Let's start with the brutal truth. 99% of leaders vanish the moment they step off stage. Their ideas die with their tenure. Their teams crumble without their micromanagement. Their philosophies are reduced to motivational posters in break rooms nobody reads. Why? Because they built nothing but ego. Ego is fragile. Ego needs applause. Legacy needs none of that. Legacy is a machine. It thrives on silence. It feeds on consistency. It demands that you design systems so precise, so self-sustaining, that your presence becomes a relic. Your goal isn't to be the hero. It's to be the architect of a code so powerful that even your enemies quote it. You want to outlast. Stop relying on charisma. Charisma is a spark. Systems are wildfires. Your first task is to weaponize routine. Not your routine, theirs. Infiltrate the daily habits of your team, your clients, your industry, until your methodology is oxygen. They breathe it without thinking. They teach it without crediting you. They defend it as if it were their own. This is how cults outlive their founders. This is how religions conquer continents. You are not building a team. You are programming a hive mind. Every meeting agenda, every email template, every conflict resolution protocol must bear your fingerprints, not your name, your DNA. Outthinking the competition doesn't mean being smarter. It means being inevitable. While they chase trends, you embed principles. While they pivot, you crystallize. Your strategies must become axioms, unassailable truths that others regurgitate as common sense. Think deeper. Apple doesn't sell technology. It sells a cosmology, a universe where every device, ad, and store layout whispers the same gospel. Steve Jobs didn't die. He dissolved into the ecosystem. Your communication empire must achieve the same. Reduce your philosophy to mantras so simple a child can parrot them, yet so profound that PhDs dissect them. Repeat them until they're boring. Then repeat them more. Boring breeds dogma. Dogma outlives genius. Outmaneuvering isn't about speed, it's about depth. While others skirmish on the surface, you drill tunnels. Your words aren't for today. They're sleeper cells, plant ideas that detonate years later. Train disciples who train disciples. Embed your voice in training manuals, onboarding processes, cultural rituals. Leave nothing to interpretation. Interpretation is cancer. Clarity is your scalpel. Every policy document, every mission statement, every performance review template must be a mirror reflecting your unaltered vision. When a new hire joins your team a decade from now, they shouldn't learn your methods. They should breathe them. Here's where weak minds stall. They confuse legacy with nostalgia. They hoard knowledge, fearing obsolescence, idiocy. Your playbook must be a virus, spreading aggressively, mutating adaptively. Give it away. Let rivals steal it. Watch them stumble trying to replicate what you've engineered. They'll lack the code, the invisible architecture only you understand. Your true power lies not in the content, but the context, the timing, the delivery, the unspoken rules that turn your framework from a tool into a cult. Teach your methods publicly, but reserve the master key. Let the masses mimic the skeleton. Only your inner circle inherits the nervous system. Legacy is not a noun. It's a verb, a ruthless, daily grinding down of entropy. You think culture sustains itself? Think again. Culture is a garden overrun by weeds the moment you look away. Your job is to salt the earth, to make deviation impossible, to engineer a world where betraying your principles feels like betraying gravity. How? First, annihilate ambiguity. Every value you preach must be measurable. Integrity is a hallmark card. We respond to all client emails within 97 minutes, even on Sundays, is a law. Second, create self-policing tribes. Reward those who enforce your code. Promote the zealots. Exile the skeptics. Third, mythologize your story, not your resume. Your scars, your stupidest failures, your most naked vulnerabilities. Let them see the blueprint of your evolution. People don't follow perfection. They follow struggle they recognize. But here's the razor's edge. To embed your legacy, you must first erase yourself. Your likes, your quirks, your petty preferences, irrelevant. What remains is pure function. A set of rules so universal they transcend your personality. This is why founders fail. They conflate their identity with their systems. They demand loyalty to them, not the machine. Big mistake. Your face will fade. Your accent will be forgotten. Your machine must speak in every language, thrive in every climate, survive every era. Detach, distill, depersonalize. The moment your legacy needs your charisma to survive, you've built a sandcastle. Let's get tactical. How do you turn a team into apostles? Start with language. Control the lexicon. Replace corporate jargon with your own vernacular. Words you coin, phrases you trademark, inside jokes that bond and exclude. When someone describes a problem, they must use your terminology to be understood. Next, ritualize dissent. Force them to attack your ideas, in your arena, by your rules. Monthly heresy hours, where they must argue against your core principles, using logic you've pre-approved. This isn't democracy. This is inoculation. Make them immune to outside persuasion by letting them play rebel in a cage you designed. Document obsessively. But not manuals, manifestos. Write every policy as if it's scripture. Use cadence, repetition, and aphorisms. Speed trumps perfection. Clarity is kindness. Silence is the scaffold of strategy. These aren't slogans. They're mental programming. Repeat them in every presentation, every email sign-off, every performance review, until they're tattooed on your team's synapses. When faced with a crisis, they won't think critically. They'll reflexively quote you. That's when you've won. Now, The uncomfortable truth. Legacy demands sacrifice. You will be misunderstood. You will be called a tyrant. You will watch mediocre minds dilute your life's work and claim it as their own. Let them. The goal isn't credit, it's permanence. When a former employee bastardizes your framework to launch their own consultancy, they're not stealing from you. They're spreading your plague. When a competitor mimics your strategies but lacks the discipline to execute, they're not a threat. They're a billboard for your superiority. Legacy isn't diminished by imitation. It's validated. Still here? Good. Because we've reached the heart of it. To build a communication empire, you must master the art of strategic disappearance. The faster you remove yourself from the front line, the sooner your systems mature. Hovering over your team's shoulders, you're a crutch, micromanaging client calls. You're a bottleneck. Your presence should be felt, not seen. Your voice should echo, not speak. Train replacements who outshine you. Mentor protégés who frighten you. If your empire needs you to function, you've built a prison, not a legacy. Let's talk about scaling. Most people think bigger teams, louder campaigns, more content. Number scaling legacy is about density, not size. A single disciple who embodies your code is worth 1,000 half-trained recruits. A client who applies your principles to their entire organization is worth 100 one-time buyers. Go deep, not wide. Penetrate layers. Infiltrate decision-making strata. Become the silent partner in every deal. The ghostwriter in every strategy. The uncredited muse in every innovation. Your name doesn't need to be known. Your rules just need to reign. Finally, the ultimate test. What thrives when you die? When your heart stops, when your social media goes dark, when your office is repurposed, what remains? If the answer is a thriving ecosystem that barely notices your absence, you've succeeded. If your team debates your replacement for more than 24 hours, you've failed. Legacy isn't a vacancy to fill. It's a climate to inhabit. This chapter isn't inspiration. It's a war plan. The battlefield? Time? The weapon? A communication code, so deeply embedded in the fabric of others that it becomes their own. Start today. Not with a speech. With a system. Not with a memo. With a manifesto. The empire doesn't wait for perfect. It's built by the relentless, one brick of clarity at a time. Now, get to work.